stop making that big face.
Hello, I am Vic.
And I'm Madison.
And we're doing the topic of the week conversation slash discussion for the week of March. The first week of March.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about this YouTube audio podcast on YouTube about that's titled Why I Left Anarchism and Why I Came Back. And there's also a post about it on anarchistnews.org.
Mm-hmm. So did you listen to the podcast?
Yes.
And what did you think?
Well,
do you want to like summarize it kind of?
Ooh. Okay. It's about this person with a very convincing British accent talking about how they were an anarchist for a while, and then they decided to be communist for a while.
Well, like, not even just a communist, like a
state communist.
Yeah.
Well, that is just a communist.
Okay.
Well, that's maybe a story for another day. But, then they came back around, and they decided to be an anarchist again. But first, they were a libertarian capitalist.
Before they were an anarchist.
Yes. They said they dabbled.
Okay. And then they became a Stalinist-Leninist? No.
Marxist-Leninist.
Marxist-Leninist.
Or Maoist, ML, Maoist-Leninist.
Mm. And what brought them back to anarchy?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's not... It wasn't that clear to me. I think just the kind of the hierarchy that happened in the organizations, it seemed like.
Oh yeah, in the podcast it talked a lot about that hierarchy. It became evident to him that people would not abolish the hierarchy ever.
Right.
And that the structure of the political tendency promoted hierarchy. Would that be a way of saying it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, like, embedded in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole way they were doing it, everything they were doing, like, required there to be a crystallized hierarchy
mm-hmm.
in place. I really liked the part where they go through things that, like, they reflect on the things that they saw as inadequacies within anarchist collectives. Being kind of like really slow or disorganized, and that like eventually when they came back around, they realized that those things allowed people to do projects together in a way that was aligned with anarchist values, that they were doing things slowly because they were doing it at their own pace. They weren't, like, being self-sacrificial, is, like, how I hear that. It's not exactly the wording they use, but
mm-hmm.
That they were, again, I'll just use my own words, but how I heard it is, like, people are not pushing themselves outside of their own capacity or desires, or just, like, are doing what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that looks like a mess or, like, slow.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't. And, but when there's not a hierarchy or anyone giving out orders or, like, threatening punishment, then that is what it becomes. And that's actually... And that's, like, they basically talked about that as a strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really heard... I haven't really heard many anarchists talk about that. I think often it's, like... I'll hear people, like, kind of poke fun at that, because everyone knows that. You know, if you've been an anarchist for a while, you've been doing anarchist projects, or, like, involved in anarchist spaces, you know what this person's talking about.
That there's, like, inefficiency or something?
Yeah, that there is kind of a... there is inefficiency often. There is, like, kind of things fall through the cracks or things move slower than people maybe would like them to. Mm-hmm. And... Yeah, I mean, I've seen that so many times, too. It's not always a thing. I mean, some things are very efficient, but it's... That is what happens, I guess, like, when people are just doing what they want rather than doing it out of fear of punishment or out of, like, striving for some higher place in a hierarchy where they get more power or, like, get some kind of special privilege. Yeah. You are really just left with, like, what do I want to do? What can I do? You keep asking yourself these questions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that looks like, well, maybe I don't really want to do this. Or I don't want to do it very quickly. Or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, I liked at the end where they were talking about the permanent, experimentation.
Mm.
Yeah. That's the thing I like about anarchy. Yeah. But I guess it's nice, too, when people talk about their frustrations with something, why they left, and then talk about why they came back, too. And so, what are some things that, like, we've seen that make people leave anarchy?
There's a lot.
Like what?
Well, the thing I think about often in regards to this is that, and maybe this, I mean, this is also, in a way, me self-reflecting on my own ways of doing things, is I and people around me sometimes mistake articulating values for actually living them. And that saying you're an anarchist or saying you, like, don't want to have power over other people or don't want people to have power over you or coerce people into doing things. Like, saying that doesn't make it so. And actually living those things is, like, really hard and complicated and context-specific and, like, takes a lot of practice. And we don't really get much practice or, like... I think a lot of the knowledge and lessons of that type of living has been, like, erased over and over. And so figuring that out, like, takes a long time and is complicated and is, like, painful in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so but yes, to answer your question, I think sometimes when people face the fact that, like, their social environment is outwardly communicating a specific set of values, but then doesn't live up to those. They get really disappointed because, mm-hmm. understandably, they feel like they've been lied to. Which, in some ways, is true, but I don't think it's quite that simple. Like, I think it's like people are lying to themselves first, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you create an environment in which people are, like, kind of not being a little delusional, maybe, about their ability to live those values. And they think, you know, if they just say it enough times, then they're doing it. And then if that's an entire social environment of people kind of doing that, then, like, it's not like they're lying to any particular person. It's just the atmosphere of the place. And so I see people leaving for that reason. Mm-hmm. Like disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Of falling short.
I've seen people leave a lot for feeling like... it's like too... Here, I'm just going to list them and we can pick up whatever we want to talk about, but... just off the top of my head, like, feeling like it's too insular, and, like, claustrophobic, and that they can't relate to, quote, real people, right?
Mm.
That's one I've heard from my late 20s. let's see, people have left because there's been some, like, instance of, like, I think this fits under the category of disappointment, like you were saying, but just, like, they had a breakup or, like, there was an abuse situation and then they felt unsupported. Let's see. Oh, they, like, want to feel more efficient in their organizing or feel like there are, like, clear roles.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be some.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last one is gets closer to what the person was talking about in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Or the YouTube. I don't know, is that still a podcast if it's on YouTube like that?
I think so.
Okay. For our purposes, it's a podcast. This is a podcast about a podcast. Then, yeah, it seemed like that's kind of what happened with the person. I've seen that happen, and I got in a bit of a argument with someone on that specific topic, and I kind of I got really frustrated by the arguments they were making, and. Because they were arguing for, like, hierarchy and starting to go, like, they were also arguing in the direction of, like, state formations, like, kind of sympathies for state communist things. And I eventually responded by saying that really probably the most efficient thing you could do if that's your goal is to be a fascist, because that's the most clear, most direct, most understandable, like, rigid system of roles in which things are all about efficiency, or at least present themselves in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone just does what they're told and everything gets done or whatever. Including the eradication of the people that don't want to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, in the name of efficiency. And so I think that's, like, if you're willing to go in that direction, I think it's worth acknowledging that it's, like, you can go in that direction infinitely, and the end point is something like fascism.
So you're saying that people who are interested in efficiency will inevitably become fascists?
If they keep going in that direction,
yeah. If they keep going in that direction. That's kind of like a... That's like a long, slippery slope argument or something.
Sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It just seems kind of like a stretch.
Well, I mean, I would also call authoritarian communism a type of fascism. Mm-hmm. Specifically state communism. I would agree with other anarchists that have had direct experience with it. And calling it red fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I think efficiency as a goal always is one of authoritarian power.
Mm-hmm. But I would argue that probably this person you're talking about, their goal wasn't efficiency. Their goal was efficacy.
What is the difference?
What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
I thought efficiency is like doing something quickly and well, and efficacy is how effective you are in, like, fighting a state or something. I mean, efficacy is like how effective you are in general, but the person being like, efficacy would mean in that context probably that there are more people. It's better organized, right?
I mean, yeah, that's interesting. Just juxtaposition. I would say in that case the two are pretty unrelated, actually. Huh. And like, for example, a lot of activists are really about efficiency, and in terms of like doing more things, getting the most people on board. Having really big marches, for example, or like getting a lot of funding for their orgs or something, you know, or having messages be seen by a lot of eyes, or but in the end, I think a lot of their projects actually bolster the thing that they're trying to attack. Like, a lot of those activist projects actually just are a part of the system that it's sometimes at least saying that it's trying to diminish.
But I think that...
Which means they're being efficient in their goals of, like, getting funding, of, like, getting a lot of people out in the street, but they're not effective at all. They're actually the opposite.
But this is too broad, because everybody's going to have a different definition of what is effective, and your definition of efficacy or what's effective is like an anti-civ anarchist's one. So you're like maybe their goals is to have as many people as possible in the street with them at the same time and feel like they have collective power. But maybe like, but maybe like what I think is effective is like stopping something. Or
I think a lot of them would say that their goal is to stop something, not just to have a bunch of people out there. I mean, I think we're giving them a bit too much credit, because I think a lot of the time it literally is just an industry of like circulating funds.
We're just being too vague, because you're probably thinking of a different example than I'm thinking of. So do a case study.
A case study. I'm gonna do a case study. I'll bullshit though.
Yeah, make something up. Whatever, yeah, something that's like possible.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but
or that you've seen something that I've like seen. That, something that's believable.
Yeah, believable. I can try. Well, you know, like a lot of these, like for example, the like ISO, RCP, PSL, acronym Socialist Communist Orgs, that like anything that happens in politics, they like call for a big march.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal seems to be to get the most people to go in the street and to hold their signs. But the long-term goal, if you read their literature or whatever, is to overthrow capitalism and sometimes install the chairman of their organization as the figurehead of the new post-revolutionary, glorious, equal and good society. And I think they can be pretty, I mean, like, compared to other groups of people, or other orgs, they can be pretty efficient at doing that. Like, some of the PSL marches have hell of people at them.
You're using the word efficient, like, effective, I think.
But I'm saying it's not, it's, okay, is this even,
yeah,
is this
know.
Even important?
We're not making an efficient use of time.
Yeah, yeah, maybe this is where it's, what's, is it effective though?
I think you're saying.
well, I'm saying if their goal is to overthrow capitalism and install their chairman, they're not being very effective at all.
Yeah.
But they are being very efficient at printing signs, making sure they're in people's hands with their organizational website on there.
Okay.
And having sometimes thousands or tens of thousands of people come out. They seem like they really got that shit down. Compared to like anarchists even. I'm not saying we should be competing with their fucking idiot parade, but like No disrespect, with all due respect, but but yeah, anyway, I guess maybe it's not that important to, or I'm not sure, maybe it's a little important to figure out the difference, efficiency versus efficacy, as one relates to, like, efficiency relates maybe, or what I'm hearing us get to is the efficiency has to do with more immediate, like, process. And efficacy is maybe is more of is it getting you towards a longer term goal? But I don't know if I would. I don't know if I think of things in terms of that with anarchy, because of the like, because of the means and ends, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
that those are, because those are not separate, I'm not, like, separating what I'm doing in the moment with what my long-term goals are necessarily at all.
You're trying not to betray your end values in the process of achieving them.
Right. Well, if I were to do that, I would be willing then to say I'm not doing anarchy anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But those, yeah, I mean, I like how, and that, to get back to the podcast and stuff, to get back to talking about the podcast that we're talking about, fuck, no, I forgot what I was saying. You have any? I had a thing, and then I confused myself because it's like meta podcast double thing. Mm-hmm. What do you have?
We're talking about like what makes people leave and come back.
Right.
Do you have like a personal story about that, or have you left before?
I kind of left. I mean. I didn't stop being an anarchist. I got out of, like, organizing, I guess.
Because
I started out, you know, I kind of started out doing organizing in a way for a while. A lot of the people I was doing that with started becoming communists.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of the thing that is now called Tikkunis.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really put off by the way they were talking, or some of them were talking about what they're doing, as if they started seeing themselves as like kind of like puppeteers, or like kind of like playing this game with,
mm-hmm.
with people and with like people's perception of reality, and really. It felt really manipulative. And then I also noticed that they were relating to me in that way, even though we'd been, like, friends for years and years. And I felt, like, in some ways dehumanized
mm-hmm.
in the process. And that really turned me off of interacting with them. And I also, like... Well... I think there was also a class difference or something, and for me, like, I didn't, they, at the time it became trendy to, like, be a hipster, basically, and, like, doing things associated with that were, like, doing more expensive things or whatever, and I was, kind of, in some ways, over punk, but still into DIY and into crime, like, petty crime stuff. Really committed to that, and I was like, what, you're actually buying stuff? You know, and that just seemed boring to me, and it made me uncomfortable. Like, I haven't really ever felt comfortable in that, and like the expensive lifestyle stuff really like turned me off too, and so I just kind of became more of a criminal, I guess. I mean, I didn't stop being an anarchist, but I just was like, I'm gonna live being unruly, not by organizing, but by, like, not following laws or breaking them, or finding a way to, like, live outside of society to some extent through, like, criminality or whatever. And then I kind of came, I guess, the way I came back around is, like, first time Trump got elected, I saw it as, like, a real... It freaked me out that happened. It was surprising. And maybe I'd been, like, living kind of an insular life enough that I was really surprised by that. And I thought that, like, I need to become a part of, like, bigger groups of people that are doing stuff, that are organizing or whatever. And so I got back involved in that. But I wouldn't really say, like, yeah, I left, like, a specific kind of anarchism. And then came back around, and now I've kind of left that again. Or it's been a few years now. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe this speaks to the thing the person in the other podcast said about anarchy, and you also said you really like this, right? Like, that anarchy is kind of like a process, mm-hmm. and is like kind of a creative, like, questioning of what it means, and then, like, continuing to answer that for yourself, finding the right questions to ask, given our context, and so maybe I wasn't like, I'm a socialist now or something. The whole time I call myself an anarchist, but I think I strayed pretty far. Yeah, I think I strayed pretty far from actually living those values in that time. Mm-hmm. And then fear is what brought me back, I guess. and then I had to re-go through the cycle of, like, organizing, and then again experiencing the thing of, like, oh, this is pretty dehumanizing, and is, like, a way of relating to people as, like, game pieces or something. And then again, like, finding out how I want to do things differently, which got me kind of to where I am now. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I don't think I ever really left.
Hmm.
But I don't know. Let's think. I'm going to think. There was, like, a time period maybe a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, where I took a couple years off of, like, going to anything.
Mm.
But I always still did my, like, I did prisoner support, and I cared about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, like, dabbled in communism or like, leaving or being disillusioned. I think I got burnt out and took, like, a year off. Yeah. But I've definitely, like, left different scenes within, or, you know, like, strayed and come back, or, like, had different opinions about, like, what my peers are doing, and then that would make me, like, go find a different grouping of people, or, yeah. But it's also, like, very hard for me to talk about anarchy as this, like, monolithic thing, because it's obviously there are people who call themselves anarchists who I, like, don't agree with and don't find, I'm not inspired by and don't really want to,
mm-hmm.
you know, be around.
What do you think about that, like, as a, mm-hmm. as an occurrence?
What do you mean as an occurrence?
That there are people that call themselves anarchists that you don't fuck with or whatever. Not that you hate necessarily, but you just, like, don't want to do what they're doing, or maybe your way of doing anarchy is, like, really, really drastically different, maybe even different enough that you wouldn't call their thing anarchy and they wouldn't call yours anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that as a thing? Because that seems like a constant.
And I think it's a reason why people leave. It's, like, stays within the, you know, like, not seeing yourself reflected back or something.
Huh.
Or feeling, like, alone within it, or that it's, like, too disparate, or this kind of thing.
What do you mean? What's an example?
Like, maybe there are people who I know who are, like, anarchy nerds. They, like, really study it. They think about, like, all the different, like, possibilities. They, mm-hmm. like, certain anarchist thinkers, and then there's people who are, like, we're anarchists, and they're maybe more, like, rad libs or something.
What does that mean?
Like, haven't rejected or analyzed American values, or, like, quote-unquote American values, or are preoccupied with, like, what's that word? Reform.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Mm. Who don't think about, like, systemic problems systemically, but think about it like, as like a few bad apples or something. Do you know what I mean?
I realizing how big of an influence that stuff had on me, but I really like how they talked about it in The Brilliant. They referred to those people as knob turners.
What does that mean?
That, like, that they see the machine, they're aware of it, and instead of thinking that it needs to be destroyed, they're looking for the right knobs to turn.
Right.
And the right combination of knobs that will make the machine a really nice machine, and will make it the machine work for everyone. And the critique, of course, is like, why? Like, so many people have already spent their entire lives looking for the knobs, and it's just made the machine better at killing and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's, you should just destroy it. That seems like the clear thing. Anyway, that detracts from what you're saying. I've really been thinking about the knob turning thing, and like, it's such a nice way to talk about reform. Or the Rad Lib thing.
But I do like it when, like, in this podcast we listen to, like, when people can admit that they've left and come back and why. Like, I think that makes me kind of, like, trust them, you know?
Totally.
Because it means that they're not just, like, parroting the party line or whatever. Yeah. They've, like, experimented with other ideas and, like, they were dissatisfied and then they tried to find a solution for that for themselves, and then, like, realized that they wanted to come back.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Amish thing.
What's the Amish thing?
Where they have the tradition. I don't know if it's a rule or a tradition, but there's the thing, there's a word for it too, where in Amish communities, young people are encouraged to, like, leave and do, like, I think a year in cities or whatever, and, like, see all the blasphemous behavior of living in an American city, and then they realize how good they had it, and almost all of them come back, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, a way of them kind of, like, reinforcing their community.
Mm-hmm.
Is that people are, you're not, like, held captive necessarily, and you're definitely allowed to go see how people live outside of your community.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, like, see that it's the thing you have is better, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I feel the same way about it when people come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely worry about the thing of, like, I mean, I'm pretty into, or I am into lifestyleist kind of anarchy stuff more than I'm against it, way more. And, but I do worry that creating a social scene or environment that's, like, exciting and fun for people, just, I don't fully, it makes me a little skeptical that in that kind of situation people are actually, like, thinking about the ideas very hard. Maybe they're just having fun in a friend group, and they're, like, yeah, sure, whatever, anarchy, you know? But really it's more about just having friends and doing fun stuff. Which is, like, fine. I'm not necessarily knocking that, but it is, like, I think something to think about.
I read today that there was, like, an update from the Prairie Land case, and this person was testifying and named all of the people, and then the prosecutor, or maybe it was the defendant, was, like, noticed that, you know, while she's snitching on these people, she's, like, crying, and they're like, "Why are you crying?" And she's like, "I love these people, they're my friends." And I feel like that's, like, a perfect encapsulation of what you're talking about. It's like, you didn't really think about the values. They're just your friends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously more complicated because the state throws someone at it, but I'm just, that's, like, an example of, like, not believing in means or ends kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. But I think that that's like what subcultural stuff does sometimes, is that there's people who are in the group who are taking risks, and then there's people who are proximal to that to feel like they're having an edgy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those people, we find out often, they can be benign, but they can also totally be liabilities.
Yeah, I think they're more often liabilities than not.
But you've probably had the experience of, in hindsight, being able to say that person's a liability, but in the moment you're like, oh, I like so-and-so, they like make good cookies or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do like cookies.
Yeah, me too. That's how they get you every time.
But this, was this person a prominent cookie maker?
No, I don't know. Just leaving crumbs to the house.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Poetry. I mean, to that point, I think maybe it's worth talking about, like, that some of the kind of anarchist slogans or ideas are, like, pretty dangerous, potentially, and are, like, directly hostile to really powerful forces. And it's worth thinking that if you're going to be saying or thinking, or, like, yeah, if you're going to be saying those things or acting on them in any type of way, that, like, that might have really severe consequences. And if you're just doing that so your friends think you're cool or one of them or whatever, that's, like, really unsafe for both you and your friends. And it's worth taking time to think about, like, okay, well, what if the feds come knocking at my door for me because I said this thing or because I did this thing that seems that like the state received as a direct threat or whatever, and like, am I willing to take jail time, prison time, to not snitch on my friends and my loved ones? Like, that's like totally like worth sitting with, like, probably over and over, as long as you keep doing anarchy. That living this way, like, can have really scary consequences, and, like, you should get ready to face those, potentially. Because otherwise, like, yeah, you might snitch. Like, that's just the reality. And, like, you're gonna be faced with people that are, like, really good at disorienting, confusing, and fucking scaring people into snitching and putting, you know, like, doing direct harm to their loved ones. Like, there's, like, you know, fuck, like, hundreds, thousands of years of, like, knowledge of how to do that to people now, and, like, it's gonna be a lot harder than just being, like, fucking ACAB or whatever, you know? Like, they're gonna fuck with you. They're gonna try to break you, and, like, that's really feels different. Like, it's worth getting ready for that.
That's another reason why people leave anarchy, right?
The repression?
Yeah, risk.
Totally.
Consequence.
Yeah, I respect that shit. I don't even have anything really to say to that.
Hmm.
Necessarily. I just respect it. I don't know. Like, I mean, I've had people leave because they went to jail or something, and they're like, fuck, I can't do this. You know? They went to jail for a couple of days or whatever, and they were, like, so freaked out by the experience of just being trapped in a room or whatever that they were like, I can't do this anymore. And so they, like, got out of the lifestyle they were living. And I'm not going to fucking argue with them about that. Like, I'd rather someone say that than fucking try to be hella tough and talk about whatever and then end up snitching or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is what I think would probably happen.
Yeah.
If someone knew that they can't handle that and then kept doing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That just, to me, that's like, oh, you're being actually real with yourself and the people around you. I support it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can look different ways too, though, right? Because, like, I also had someone I know that wasn't an anarchist but was, like, adjacent decide they want to be a cop. And that's like some other, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. what? That's like something else.
Or what about people who leave anarchy because they want to make money? Like actual money?
That's a different conversation than them leaving because of repression.
Yeah, definitely. But no, we're just talking about the reasons that people leave.
No, because they want to make real money?
Or like, I don't know.
They want to be like successful careerists or whatever.
Or something. Yeah.
Well, they're joining the other 99.99999% of the people in the society or whatever. So, as far as I'm concerned, like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. They're just, they're just joining the thing that they said they're against.
Mm-hmm.
That's their call. I don't know. I guess the dramatic thing to say is, I know, yeah, whatever, I don't know. they're going to be on the other side of the barricade, potentially, and, like, for me, and that's, like, that's something worth acknowledging, you know?
The other side of the barricade for when you're, like, sword fighting or something?
Sword
like
fighting? I don't, I guess, I haven't heard of that, but...
Well, does the other side of the barricade refer to, like, the French Revolution or something?
Does it?
Does it? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I always thought it was just, like, general use of barricades. I didn't know it was specific to the French.
Maybe it's not. It's probably not.
Were they even using swords in the French Revolution?
Probably not.
Huh.
They were using pens.
Pens.
That's right, you know?
Those are even scarier.
They were guillotines and pens, I think.
Yeah. I can throw a pen pretty good.
Anyways.
No,
I know that it's from all different wars, but for whatever reason, the French Revolution just popped
into my head. That's how you
market
a barricade? It's like Napoleon bat and a saber?
I don't think that's the French Revolution.
I don't fucking know. But Europe doesn't matter. Everyone knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. No, Europe sometimes matters. I take it back. I don't want to be too laissez-faire with it.
oh my goodness.
What are we talking about? Was there other questions?
Mm.
We were talking about why do people leave?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the last thing you brought up is to make money.
But why do people come back?
Why do people come back? Shit. I mean, the easy way to put it for me. And I don't know, I'm not even willing to defend this necessarily, but I'll just say it. I think some people are actually just anarchists. There's just people that are, like, they, like, really want to be a normal person or whatever, and they, like, can't. And so they come back because they, like, can't. They, like, think they want to go have a family and have a normal job or whatever, or, like, have a career, whatever the thing is, they decide they're going to go leave to, and then it, like, turns out they, like, totally can't do it,
because mm-hmm.
They feel whatever, they feel dissatisfied, or they're constantly thinking about how it was when they were an anarchist or whatever, and so they come back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just kind of like that. Or they're really, maybe they had a different impression of the thing they were leaving to, and then they actually get to live it and realize it actually sucks, which is maybe like what this podcast person was talking about, becoming a communist.
Oh, I thought of another reason why people leave is like tokenization, like feeling tokenized.
Mm.
And that happens a lot in social scenes, I think.
Like race.
Race,
or class,
yeah.
Or something.
Mm-hmm.
Gender,
yeah.
Something. Mm-hmm. Like. Yeah.
Like feeling totally. Like there are some people who like make calls, but like a sense that you're a minion or something.
Or you're like, well, how I've seen that play out is people tokenizing people to use them as like kind of to demonstrate, like, legitimacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that, like, oh, like, I want to do this thing, and there's, like, these kind of marginalized people on my side, thereby what I'm trying to do is, like, totally justified and correct.
Mm-hmm. And people getting used in that way will make them sick of anarchists.
Yeah.
And communists or whoever. Like, it's not just anarchists who do that, obviously, but that's just a reason that I've seen people leave. And then come back also, because, not because of that reason, but because they care about it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense why you would leave.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such like a political maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in anarchy not to do politics or not to kind of be manipulated and have to like navigate different people manipulating each other as a means to power, like that would really suck, especially if it's like about something about yourself that you didn't choose, or, you know, or like very personal or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fucked. And kind of surprising that people would come back after something like that. That seems pretty intense, maybe. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced that, really. Seems like it would be pretty hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's coming from people that are, like, claiming to be your friends and stuff.
Definitely. Mm.
Is there other questions, or should we... Is there other questions?
Well, just two more reasons why I think people come back. Mm-hmm. People come back because there's been something that's happened in the world that they can't, like, that the sort of political response isn't working.
Mm.
And they remember, like, how anarchists would address something, or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something that I've seen a lot.
Yeah.
Or they just, there was like some story that these people I knew, I think, they like talked about it, like, you get a splinter, I think it's called troll splinter, and you get a splinter and you look at the world in this like completely different way. And when you have the troll splinter, you're like, you can see, whatever, I can't remember, like magic or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then like people never want to take it out because that's, they're like seeing what the world is like. I feel like anarchy can be like that a little bit. It's like you're seeing power structures, in a way that allows you to not rejoin or something, right? Like it's hard to stomach.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's like a lens.
A lens, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally, yeah, it's like hard to unsee that or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think that quite happened to me, but yeah, I didn't leave enough or something.
Mm-hmm.
Is there other? No. Okay.
All right.
Does it feel pretty, pretty? Well, okay. I had a question. Would you? Well, no. It's a short one. I mean, maybe just to conclude this, would you recommend people listen to the podcast? Not this one, of course. This one, you should have. Yeah, you already listened if you're listening. And we'll cut this.
I like that the main preoccupation you're having is like that there's a podcast that we're talking about within a podcast, and every time you're like, "Whoa, it's like so meta."
No, it's making me stumble. I don't know why. So maybe we can talk about it in a month. But yeah, I was asking. Would you recommend people listen to that one?
I thought it was interesting enough. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I do. I really do, actually.
Great.
Yeah, I think it makes important points through a personal story, which is how I really like when arguments are made.
Mm-hmm.
Or like when I like when a story is told rather than arguments are being made. And I get involved in like communist versus anarchy type things sometimes, and I think this person like illustrates some of my critiques like pretty well just through personal experience, which mm-hmm. is like, I mean, kind of the best way. I don't know. I like it the most. And, like receiving information like that or engaging with it.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend it. And yeah, that accent is beautiful. No, I'm clowning. But yeah. I think that's all I have.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go effectively, efficiently. I don't know. To sleep?
Yeah, take a nap. The most efficient nap you can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, goodbye, everyone. Have a time. Come to daddy. Come to daddy. Come to daddy.